This is the Book Club at 91.7. I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for listening this morning. A story that's very near and dear to my heart. I am related to Oliver Jim Spriggs, a veteran of the U.S. Navy, who served aboard the destroyer Laffey, DD-724, during World War II. I have to say, I lost Pop back in January, but I remember his many stories about serving in the Pacific on the Laffey, the ship that would not die, a ship that was the subject of the largest single-ship kamikaze attack of World War II. And on the 70th anniversary of that attack, in 2015, John Wolkowitz has published the book Hell from the Heavens, the epic story of the USS Laffey and World War II's greatest kamikaze attack. John's joining me on the phone from his home in Michigan. John, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Well, certainly a pleasure to be here with you today. You're right in your introduction. It's quite a story, and you have every right in being proud of having a family relation involved in it, Mark. So it's my pleasure to talk to you about this.
Well, I've visited the Laffey. The Laffey is down along with the Yorktown and a nuclear ship and a submarine down at Patriots Point in Charleston, South Carolina, on display there. But after you read the story in Hell from the Heavens, John, it's amazing that there's any of the ship left. The largest kamikaze attack in World War II, 22 kamikazes over an 80-minute period. And it's a gripping account in your book, Hell from the Heavens. But I also learned more about the background of the Laffey. I knew from talking to Pop that this was not the first Laffey. There had been a Laffey previously that sunk, but this Laffey was the one that saw, I think, most of the action, including getting its start in battle at Normandy during D-Day. Talk about the right. Laffey and how it came about, and its very, very important captain, Julian Becton.
Right. It was funny because when I first started looking into the idea of doing something with Laffey, I had heard, of course, about the kamikaze attack. So I thought, well, that might be a good subject for a book. Something hadn't really been done on the ship since Becton's book, which is a fine book. And then I dug into the story, and I found, geez, these guys started Normandy on D-Day, offshore, firing at enemy positions, German positions. And later in that same June 1944 month, they went to Cherbourg, where they basically hammered it out with German batteries ashore. So that was their baptism of fire. Then they went over to the Pacific and were involved in three quite major Philippine assaults as part of Douglas MacArthur's return to the Philippines. If you remember, in 1942, when MacArthur was ordered off the Philippines by President Roosevelt, he promised, "I shall return." Well, he returned in 44, and Laffey was one of the destroyers escorting the ships there and providing fire support as well as anti-aircraft fire against kamikazes. He had quite a background before they even got to Okinawa and had the kamikaze attack.
Well, and I was going to say, and a lot of that was due to Captain F. Julian Becton, who had faced battle before, but the crew on the Laffey DD-724 were young kids. This was World War II, towards the end of World War II, and you talk about the age of these sailors, and that they were very inexperienced.
That's always struck me, no matter what project I'm involved with, is, you know, sometimes we think in terms of soldiers being older, mature, et cetera, et cetera. These are kids, many of them just out of high school, if not even having graduated from high school. And we're handing such tremendous responsibility, or the nation was handing such tremendous responsibility to these kids. Well, Becton saw that, as did a lot of the skippers in World War II. They had a raw crew. 70% to 80% could be inexperienced. So he focused heavily on training, which any good commander should have done, but he took it even to the next step and had endless drills to the point where some of the men would gripe a little to themselves, never to the skipper. And, you know, what do we need this for? Well, as one guy told me, when we got to the Philippines, then we knew why we needed all those drills. That's when the kamikazes started coming.
And you talk about
Becton was the guy.
You talk about the kamikazes. That was a movement that started in 1944, a tactic by the Japanese.
Yeah, the first ones in Leyte Gulf, the Battle of Leyte Gulf in October of 44. The kamikazes had been considered for a couple of years in Japan, but the decision was pushed off. Well, we don't need this kind of a measure yet. Well, by October 44, things were getting drastic, where Japan was running out of ships, out of aircraft, out of experienced pilots, out of you name it. And so they boiled it all down to a simple, in their mind, equation: one ship, one plane. Take it out. Just have a kamikaze fly into the ship, and if you hit it in the right spot, one plane could destroy one ship. So it was the utmost use of its resources. And so they started using it in October of 44 in the Philippines, and that's where Laffy encountered the first ones. Not as much diving at Laffy, but at ships near it. And they saw horrendous damage and death. And that's when a lot of the guys told me war really hit home when we saw that. The damage that one plane could do to a ship, and look, it wiped out my gun position on that other ship, one guy told me. And so it really hit him hard.
John Wilkowitz, he's the author of Hell from the Heavens, the epic story of the USS Laffy and World War II's greatest kamikaze attack. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And I was going to say it was at Ormoc where the crew of the Laffy lost their sister destroyer, the Cooper, and then the war really came home as they were dealing with casualties from another ship, the Hughes, that had been struck by a kamikaze. And that was, even though they'd been in Normandy, even though they'd seen the action there, they were distanced from it, and it really came home then.
Yeah, you're right. Your phrase, personalized the war, is very accurate. In Normandy, it was a battle of their 5-inch guns and German artillery ashore. They never saw the enemy. They were hit by one shell, which proved to be a dud. But now, here you have this damage and destruction right at hand. And they saw these young kids on other ships with the horrendous wounds, disfiguring wounds, and obviously many of them deceased. And they were carried right by as they came to the aid of Hughes, for instance. The wounded were brought aboard Laffy. And so here you had these kids, again, 18, 19 years old, looking at this, thinking, oh, man, we've got to go closer to Japan, and at that time thinking, and then we've got to invade the Japanese home islands. Well, they're seeing their future is what is unfolding in front of their eyes.
So the
very sobering incident.
The Laffy was went to Okinawa, and it was there in April 16th, 1945, that kamikaze attack happened. But they had been there for some time before, and it wasn't until they were assigned to picket station number one that they knew they were really going to face the Japanese, because that is where that was on the first stop on the route, if you may, for the Japanese attacks. And somebody gave them advice when they heard they were going to picket station number one. They said, duck as fast as you can, make as much speed as you can, and shoot as fast as you can, because it was that hot a spot.
Yeah, they had been off Okinawa for a couple of weeks, and they had heard about picket station number one. Now, a picket station was an advance scouting position farther out at sea. There were 16 of these stations surrounding Okinawa, and those couple ships at each station, one destroyer and sometimes a landing craft with it, those ships would give warning to other ships closer to Okinawa, hey, here come the kamikazes. Well, they were the advance warning for the ships closer to Okinawa, but who was the advance warning for any of the ships on picket station? Nobody. So they took the brunt of the kamikazes, especially picket station number one, which was the northernmost picket station and therefore the closest to Japan and all the airfields. So most every ship that had been posted to picket station number one had been damaged or sunk. And when they received the order, when Laffy received the order to go to picket station number one, they figured, okay, we're in for it. And sailors, being a superstitious lot, thought, well, when did we get this order to go to the worst station on Okinawa, maybe in the Pacific, on Friday the 13th? And another sailor said, yeah, and look at our hull number. You mentioned it earlier, Laffy, 724, 7 plus 2 plus 4 equals, you got it, 13. And so they had all these bad feel, okay, this is it. And so they went there knowing, as Becton said, the gates of hell awaited us.
So there they are on picket station number one on the morning of April 16th, 1945. The Japanese had been making feints at them. But then the kamikazes came. Now, a lot of time when you hear about kamikaze attacks, you hear about one or two kamikazes. 22 kamikazes attacked the USS Laffy over the course of 80 minutes. And it's just unbelievable reading your account, John, of how fast they were coming. On average, once every 3 minutes, there was a kamikaze coming out. Of course, it wasn't every 3 minutes. They were coming in waves. And it was an incredible scene.
Yeah, sometimes there might be 5 minutes between a kamikaze attack. However, there also was at 9:20 in the morning when four kamikazes hit simultaneously. But as you say, it averaged about that for 80 minutes, and it was, they had no time to regroup. I mean, Becton was a skilled navigator maneuvering his ship, and his maneuvering helped save the ship. Well, if a kamikaze is attacking you on the port side, then you've got to try and maneuver to get out of the way. But if another kamikaze is coming from the opposite side, the starboard, you're turning right into it. And he had no time to really think all this out at that moment. He had to have some of it planned ahead of time, what he would try to do anyway. So it was amazing that he was able to at least keep the ship afloat and confine the damage to the latter half of the ship. I mean, there was damage all around the ship, but most of it was in the latter half. And he did that. He didn't purposely target those guys, but he was trying to keep the brain center of the ship going, the CIC, the Combat Information Room Center, where they had all of their, what we would call today, computers, and he was trying to keep that from being hit. Well, and swerving one part of the ship out of the way, you turn another into it. And those guys on the fantail, the latter part of the ship, really got hit bad.
Well, the gunners who had gone through all that rigorous training, that training paid off. The first four kamikazes who attacked were downed. It wasn't until, I think, I remember from the book, the seventh one skimmed, just a glancing blow across the top. But it was number nine that hit, and once the ninth kamikaze hit and things began to burn, there was gasoline pouring through bullet and shrapnel holes onto the lower decks, and that big column of fire that attracted more kamikazes. And in reading the account, it's amazing what these men went through. And more than once, I see the comment, "We were just trying to get it done." You know, we weren't thinking about what was happening, all the horror around them. They were just trying to get it done.
Yeah, they would say that phrase, and they would also say, "We're just doing what we were supposed to do, you know, just get it done." And they didn't think about anything else. They had been trained to do this, and therefore that's what they would do. The constant training was done by Becton so that men in the intense strain of battle wouldn't have to think about anything. They would just react. And that's what the men were doing. They were reacting. Especially when a buddy of yours is injured and needs help, you rush to his aid, or you get the hose, you try and douse the fire, do whatever you can, jump in the straps for a gunner kind of a thing. They weren't thinking in any way. They were just doing.
Well, the account is just a gripping account, and I won't share all the drama, but I highly recommend folks do read the story of Hell from the Heavens by John Wolkowitz about the USS Laffy and World War II's greatest kamikaze attack. And I mentioned the Laffy's on display now down in Charleston, South Carolina at Patriots Point. But I did not know until I read your book, John, that it went on display with all that damage in America after it sailed here. I didn't know that it had been displayed as a horror of war.
I thought that was a neat part of it, too, that Laffey was able to limp back to Pearl Harbor, and then authorities decided we couldn't fix it here when they sent it to the United States. It steamed into Seattle, and this was at a time of the war right after, because they arrived in May of 45, right after Hitler had surrendered, you know, killed himself, and Germany had surrendered. People back home were starting to lose that war effort, the sacrifice. They didn't see a need. Well, hey, the war is almost over, isn't it? Well, the Navy authorities especially knew, well, we've got to invade Japan. The war is not over. And so they made Laffey available, as it was, showing damage and all, to the public, and was there for about a week in Seattle and other places, and thousands of people showed up and walked through. And they would have different men, the crew, stationed where they were the day of the attack to point out, well, here's what happened, and here's where this guy died, et cetera, et cetera. And it did have an impact. Shipyard workers who had been leaving Seattle shipyards to go get other employment stopped doing that. And so it did have an impact on helping the war effort in that way, too.
Well, John, thank you for the story that Pop never told me. And wow, I appreciate your time and all the information I gleaned from your book. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It certainly has been my pleasure to talk about such an esteemed ship and crew, definitely. When you talk about ship, you're really talking crew.
Mm-hmm.
A ship doesn't do anything. The men aboard it do, including your relative.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
John Wolkowitz. The book is Hell from the Heavens, the epic story of the USS Laffey and World War II's greatest kamikaze attack. While the Laffey was able to limp home, 32 sailors died. Over 70 were wounded in the attack, the largest single-ship kamikaze attack of World War II. That's how the Laffey earned the nickname, the ship that refused to die. You can learn more about Hell from the Heavens and John's work at our website, wvxu.org. This is The Book Club at 91.7. Technical director is Bruce Ellis, producer is Kevin Reynolds, music director and segment engineer is Rick Andres, web guru is Jim Nolan, the announcer is Robin Carey Allgaier, and I'm Mark Purcell. Next Saturday morning on the next Book Club at 91.7, from the mind who brought you movies like Robot and Rise of the Guardians, television series like Roly Poly Oly, and dozens of kids' books, comes a memoir, sorta. William Joyce will be along to tell you about Billy's Booger on the next Book Club at 91.7. In the meantime, stay tuned for Weekend Edition, just ahead on 91.7 WVXU.